Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. This fall, the Supreme Court will decide whether gerrymandered maps in Wisconsin violate the Constitution. The decision will have far-reaching consequences for future elections across the country. Gerrymandering is the practice of redrawing legislative maps to favor one party over the other, and this happens every 10 years based on data from the census. Last year, a federal court found that Wisconsin state assembly districts drawn by a Republican legislature were unconstitutional. In 2012, the first election following the enactment of those new maps, Republicans received 48.6% of the vote in Wisconsin, but won a 60-39 advantage in the state assembly. And just to repeat that, Republicans received 48.6% of the vote, but they won a 60-39 seat advantage in the state assembly. So the judges ordered new state assembly maps in time for the 2018 election. In recent years, Republicans have used gerrymandering to secure control of both legislative chambers in a whopping 32 states. Democrats control both chambers in just 12 states, and six are split. A new analysis by the Associated Press has found that partisan gerrymandering benefits Republicans far more than Democrats. In the book Rat Effed, which is now out in paperback, today's guest, David Daley, writes about the Republican Party's redistricting majority project. It's called Red Map, and he outlines why Republicans have the largest legislative majorities in years, even though Democrats receive more votes. So today we're going to talk about how gerrymandering works, why Republicans benefit the most, and why this Supreme Court decision to take up this Wisconsin case is so important. Dave Daley is senior fellow at Fair Vote and author of Rat Effed, the true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. And Dave joins us from the studios of NPR in Washington, D.C. Hi, Dave. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, pleasure to be back, Rose. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. You also write for Salon, and you wrote a piece about the Supreme Court case saying that it could save democracy. So this is a very big deal.
This is a huge deal. The Supreme Court has never in its history been willing to define a standard for when a partisan gerrymander goes too far. They have said that it is essentially a political decision. It belongs to the legislatures. The courts have not wanted to become an arbiter of this. Now there is this case, the Gill versus Whitford case, as you talked about, coming out of Wisconsin, and it offers the first chance for a genuine standard on partisan gerrymandering before the Supreme Court in 13 years. Justice Kennedy, at the last time partisan gerrymandering reached the court back in 2004 in the Veef case out of Pennsylvania, essentially said it was a 5-4 court. It was split along the same sort of lines it is now with Justice Kennedy as the swing vote. And he said that he did not believe that those plaintiffs had a case that warranted the court's involvement. However, he left the door open if somebody could show him a meaningful standard that worked. So for the last 13 years, law professors, political scientists, data nerds have tried to come up with something that would please Justice Kennedy. Mm. Now he is perhaps on the verge of retirement. We are on the verge of the 2020 census. We are at a gerrymandering tipping point, really. And it's all essentially on Justice Kennedy's shoulders. It's still a 5-4 court, essentially, with Justice Kennedy as the swing vote on this issue. And this could be the last chance in a generation to take on a topic that has become truly poisonous and lethal to our democracy.
Wow. Well, we'll talk about the specifics of Wisconsin. But just briefly, because most of us in the Bay Area are not in races that will go one way or the other in such a Democratic-controlled state, let's talk just about gerrymandered districts. What I loved about your book, Rat Effed, is you would actually drive in some of these districts. And there are photos in your book, and it's almost like a child, like a 3-year-old drew these districts. They just make no sense. Part of them are thin, part of them are big, long. So can you just talk a little bit about how some of these maps are drawn?
Sure, absolutely. It's a fascinating process. Really, the map makers who do this work have so much information and so much data at their fingertips. And this is data that they never really had the ability to use before this last round of districting back in 2010. So when you see those crazy shapes and they jut every which imaginable way, every single one of them has a reason. There's a purpose behind each one of them. And when you drive them up close and you take every single turn of them, which I did to districts in Pennsylvania and districts in Michigan, you can see how the neighborhoods change, how the houses change, how the demographics change simply along a district line. These lines are crafted with surgical precision. There is a reason why politicians fight so fiercely to hold on to the power to do this. It's because they understand just how important it is to be able to choose their own voters. So they know who lives in these houses. They know the way that these houses vote. And they're able to draw these lines with the help of such technical and sophisticated software. There's a program called Maptitude that is really the main piece of software that folks use doing this. And you can load Maptitude up with so much information. So not just the census with all of the powerful demographic data in there, but all kinds of public records data sets, including voting records. And you can analyze those down to the precinct block level with results of recent elections. So they can draw up algorithms based on election results, public records, even consumer buying preferences, magazine subscriptions, social media likes. All of this is available for pennies on the dollar. It can be added into Maptitude. When they draw those crazy lines, they're not crazy. There is a very specific intent behind each one of them.
There's some incredible examples of what happens when people get drawn out of districts. The Associated Press has a lengthy story about how partisan gerrymandering has benefited the Republican Party. And it has this story about Michigan. As lawmakers prepared to vote on redrawn maps in 2011, former Democratic State Representative Lisa Brown recalls being summoned into a private room near the back of the House chamber. She says a top Republican lawmaker showed her two potential maps. One kept her home in the same district, while the other shifted her neighborhood into a predominantly Republican district. She said she was offered a deal: vote with Republicans or get stuck with the less favorable map. She declined and said as a result, she was gerrymandered out of her own district.
It's like blood sport. It's redistricting really is something out of The Sopranos or The Godfather. These legislatures and the folks who are drawing these lines take it very seriously. State by state, when you look at the process, it is behind closed doors. It is intently secretive, and it's supposed to be a public process. This is a deeply important piece of our democracy. These district lines are essentially the building block of our democracy, and legislators take them behind closed doors and they twist them in order to benefit their own side. In Ohio, for example, they actually called their redistricting headquarters the bunker. It was a suite at the Doubleday Hotel in Columbus, and they wouldn't let anybody in there if you did not know exactly where it was. They referred to it in their private emails that were not being sent on their state emails. They were being sent on private personal emails. I'll see you at the bunker later on today. It's the same thing in Wisconsin, where they moved redistricting from the Capitol to a politically connected law firm across the street, claimed attorney-client privilege for the public business that they were doing right there, wouldn't even let legislators see their new districts unless they signed a non-disclosure agreement. So it is taken super seriously, and it deserves to be a public process, but too often it's not.
When did this start becoming what you call a blood sport?
You know, I think it has always been a blood sport in that you can trace gerrymandering back to the beginning of the country. Patrick Henry tried to gerrymander James Madison out of the very first Congress. It's named after Elbridge Gerry, the former governor of Massachusetts, whose party back in the early 1800s designed Senate seats that looked like a salamander coming out of Boston in a way to keep control of the state Senate there, even though they had fewer votes. But really, gerrymandering takes a completely different turn in 2010. In some ways, we ought to call it something else. Because for so long, we've thought of this as something that both sides do, that is politics as usual, that is just kind of baked into the system. With the help of the technology and the data sets that come available after 2010, districting becomes so much more precise and so surgical, and you are able to draw lines that last for a decade. The amazing thing about Congress this decade is that we have fewer swing seats than we've really ever had before. And in our swing states, these districts simply don't swing at all. You have not seen a district change parties this decade in Ohio, in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania, in Michigan. You've seen one seat change side in North Carolina all decade, and that was a seat that Democrats barely held by 500 votes in 2012 and lost the next year. You've seen one seat change sides in Virginia, and that was when courts ordered a redistricting in 2016 because of racial gerrymandering. So that is a total of 80 seats over three elections, three very different elections, 2012, 2014, 2016, 238 of those elections, zero seats have changed. So that's 238 for 240 in what we consider swing states.
Why did things change so drastically in 2010?
Well, I think what happened is the Republicans come up with a plan that essentially uses the gerrymander in an altogether audacious and modern way. Republicans, we forget now, but after the 2008 election, they were not in a very strong political position in this country. Barack Obama is elected president. Democrats had a supermajority in the U.S. Senate, and they retained the U.S. House. So you had strategists within the Republican Party trying to figure out a way forward, and to figure out a way forward at a time when the demographics of the country were changing in a way that seemed to favor the Democratic Party. If you look back at the TV coverage and the newspapers of the time, folks are talking about the Republicans being a minority party for a long time to come after 2008. A handful of really savvy Republican strategists centered around something called the Republican State Leadership Committee understand that 2010 is a census year and that it offers an opportunity because all of these district lines are going to be redrawn at the state level and also at the congressional level. So elections in a zero year simply matter more because they can reverberate out across the next decade. They set to work on a very intentional and specific plan to flip control of the state legislatures that draw these lines. Essentially, in most states, it's the state legislatures that have the primary role of drawing their own districts and then also congressional districts. Republicans focused on 107 state legislative seats across 16 states with the purpose and the goal of flipping those chambers in their direction. So the Ohio Senate and the Pennsylvania House, both branches in Wisconsin, Indiana, Alabama, in an awful lot of states, they surgically targeted a handful of legislators. They spent $30 million on this, which sounds like a lot of money. It really isn't. You can't even lose a U.S. Senate seat these days for $30 million. And so they spent all of this money trying to tip control of legislative districts at the state level in their direction so that the following year, when these new lines are drawn, they would have unilateral control. They'd be the only people in the room, and then they could unleash these new software programs on the maps. And it worked brilliantly, as we see in 2012.
Brilliantly, because Republicans control 32 legislatures, Democrats control 12, six are split, and the AP has an analysis out that finds gerrymandering benefits Republicans far more than Democrats, and data suggests that even if Democrats turn out in larger numbers, their chances of substantial legislative gains are limited by gerrymandering. Today we're talking about gerrymandering with Dave Daly, senior fellow at Fair Vote, and author of the book Rat Effed, the true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. It's out in paperback now, and it's really an incredible read about how maps are redrawn to favor one party over the other. This happens every 10 years based on census data. And if you have any questions or comments for Dave, we'd love to hear from you. He traveled across the country and traveled in these districts that make no sense when you look on the map. Well, they make a lot of sense, really, but in some places they're thin, in some places they're big. It just looks like a child drew them. So what questions do you have about gerrymandering? This deserves so much more attention. And what changes would you like to see? Is it safe to say, Dave, that a lot of people don't understand how this process works, unless, of course, they live in a district that is redrawn on a regular basis?
I think that's exactly right. And I think because gerrymandering is the kind of topic that sounds technical, it's a boring, confusing-sounding word, people's eyes glaze over, and politicians take advantage of that. The politicians know exactly how important it is, and the fact that people might not understand how this works allows them to get away with the kinds of shady things that this process often allows.
Well, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also tweet us at Your Call Radio. Leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Or you can drop us an email, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Dave, this AP analysis came out recently finding that gerrymandering overwhelmingly benefits Republicans. What about Democrats?
The Democrats really got caught by surprise by all of this. They were prepared for the old kinds of battles over maps. They were prepared to litigate them. They were prepared for legislatures that couldn't agree. They were not ready for the plan that the Republicans had, which was to take control of these state legislatures and simply close the door and do this in private. And as a result, the Democrats have paid the consequence for that over the course of this entire decade. When Democrats have the opportunity to do this, they do the exact same thing. You can look in Maryland, and that's really the best example. Maryland and Illinois are the two states where Democrats had complete control over the process. And there's a court case going on right now in Maryland about partisan gerrymandering, and some amazing documents have come out talking about just the specifics of the way that Democrats in Maryland tried to steal the last two remaining Republican seats there. And it goes to the essence of what it means to be in a representative democracy. Hmm. We should not have politicians attempting to wipe out the other side. Simply because you win control of the state legislature does not mean you ought to have control over the state legislature and all of the congressional seats for the next 10 years. It renders our elections non-competitive, it renders votes meaningless, and it means that there are whole great swaths of the country that simply don't have fair representation. If you are a Republican in Maryland, and Maryland has a Republican governor, so there are plenty of Republicans in Maryland, just as there are plenty of Democrats in Michigan and Ohio, and the percentage of votes that a party gets and the percentage of seats that they have is way out of whack. And right now it's out of whack in the Republicans' favor. But it's wrong when both sides do it, and it shouldn't be done.
You mentioned Democrats doing this in Maryland and Illinois. Are the Dems using the same tactics as the Republicans? Does anything differ when you look at some of these documents that have been released about what goes on behind the scenes?
The Democrats did not have the same sophisticated political strategy that the Republicans had in 2010 to capture control of legislative chambers. But once Democrats had control of the process in Maryland, they used the exact same techniques. They loaded up Maptitude. They did really clever partisan algorithms. They moved tens of thousands of Republican voters out of the districts that they were in and into new districts. And they set about effectively trying to make Republican congressmen from the state of Maryland extinct for the course of the next decade. And they came very close at doing so. They built themselves of the – they call it a 7-1 map in Maryland because there are eight seats, and they drew themselves a 7-1. They tried to draw an 8-0, except these Democrats were partisans, certainly, but they were also cowards. They were afraid to spread the vote a little bit too thin and make themselves vulnerable. So they allowed the Republicans one seat. So 7 of 8 for the Democrats is what? That's 87.5%. The Democrats in the state win, but they don't win with 87% of the vote. They shouldn't have 87% of the seats.
We have a question about gerrymandering software. Let's hear from Joyce in Cupertino. Hi, Joyce. Welcome to the show. Do we have Joyce? Oh, Lena. Hi, Lena. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to say, you know, I think gerrymandering is obviously really undermining our democracy across the board, and it's terrible when both parties do it. But right now, the debate that you hear, the question you hear in mainstream media is, why are the Democrats failing? They keep failing. And it's never, you know, that's really a misrepresentation of what's going on if you take gerrymandering into consideration. And so I just feel like when we hear that, you know, when you read it in an op-ed, when you hear it on the radio, when you hear it in the news, you need to write in or call in, send a message saying that question should have actually been reframed because you have to take gerrymandering into consideration. So it's just like, I feel like we have to be on top of what's being put out there at a national level and giving feedback and saying, wait a second, the Democrats aren't failing, the lines were redrawn, and now the Republicans are favored.
Hmm. Well, this new AP analysis, Lena, suggests that even if Dems turn out in larger numbers at the polls, their chances of winning more seats are greatly limited because of gerrymandering. What about Lena's point, Dave?
She's exactly right. The Republican Party has a huge structural advantage that gerrymandering allows. And as a result, Democrats would probably have to win something in the area of 55 or 56% of the House popular vote in 2018 to have a chance to take back the chamber. There are a lot of people who talk about how the Democratic Party got hollowed out over the Obama years, and they point to the Democratic losses at the state level and also in Congress as proof of this. But Alina's exactly right that the lines changed in the middle of this, and that's extraordinarily important. In so many of these states, Democrats still get more votes. They simply take way fewer seats. Wow. I mean, Ohio State legislature, if you look at their lower house, it's a 66-33 Republican advantage. Wisconsin is now 65-34. North Carolina is 75-44. Pennsylvania's House is 121-81. It's not because Democrats get fewer votes in these seats. It's because that they've been packed and cracked into districts where they cannot win, and it's extraordinarily consequential. And Democrats do, however, have the responsibility to figure out a way forward, because if they can't turn some of those districts and some of those chambers in their direction, those same Republican legislatures are going to have the power to draw these lines again after the 2020 census. And the technology, as you all know out there in Cupertino, is not getting worse. It's getting better. It's getting stronger. It's very important that something is done on this now.
Well, thank you for calling, Lena. Today we are speaking with Dave Daly. He's senior fellow at FairVote and author of the book Rat F'd, the true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. It's out now in paperback. And today we are talking about gerrymandering, which is the practice of redrawing legislative maps to favor one party over the other. This happens every 10 years based on census data. And according to the Brennan Center for Justice, a new major analysis by the Associated Press, gerrymandering overwhelmingly benefits Republicans. We'll continue after the break and we'll talk about some reforms. What can we do to ensure that everyone's vote actually counts? This is Your Call and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's toll-free 866-798-8255. And you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org or tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about the high costs of summer camps and child care. For many working families with school out, summer can be the most difficult and expensive time of the year. So if you're tackling these issues, we'd love to hear from you. And then on Thursday, we're talking about nonprofits struggling to survive and pay the rent in the Bay Area. And if you work for a nonprofit that's struggling and you'd like to share your story, we'd love to hear that. And on Friday's Media Roundtable, we'll talk with healthcare reporters about the Republican Senate healthcare bill. And you can tweet us at Your Call Radio. Email feedback at Your Call Radio. And if you'd like to join today's conversation with Dave Daly, we're talking about gerrymandering, which is the practice of redrawing legislative maps to favor one party over the other. And the Supreme Court is going to decide whether gerrymandered maps in Wisconsin violate the Constitution. We're expecting a decision in... Well, they're hearing the case in the fall, and the decision will have far-reaching consequences for future elections. So if you'd like to weigh in on this, you can tweet us at Your Call Radio, email feedback at yourcallradio.org, or give us a call, 866-798-8255. Dave Daly is author of the book Rat F'd, the true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. It's out now in paperback. And let's hear from Joyce in Cupertino. Hi, Joyce. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. So the Republicans have, in general, fire in the belly, as they used to say, and they, even if the elected officials are rather bumbling, they know who to hire and get things done. And I remain completely frustrated with the Democrats for they let this happen. And I'm wondering if the software that was used was, you know, companies that might actually sell it to the Democrats also, or if it's just Republican proprietary software. Perhaps there could be open source software to do this, although I still don't even trust that. I would rather go for bingo balls where they put every name in the pot and just let them come out as they come out as a way to fairly distribute miscellaneously the electorate among these various districts.
Well, thank you for calling in, Joyce. What about this software, Dave? What can you tell us about that?
Well, both sides certainly have access to the software. The question becomes who has the authority to draw the lines, and what the Republicans were able to do in 2010 was execute a really ingenious political strategy that took control of the process. The Democrats fell asleep on it. It's not as if the Republicans didn't make it clear what they were doing. Mm-hmm. Karl Rove writes an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal in March of 2010 that lays out the entire plan. Democrats lacked the imagination to come up with it on their own, but they also lack the ability to play defense against it in these key legislative chambers across the country. Even after the smartest Republican consultant laid it out on the op-ed page of the biggest newspaper in the country. So I do think that the Democrats deserve a lot of criticism for that, and that it's entirely warranted. Right now, they are trying to catch up. They're running something called the National Democratic Redistricting Committee, which is essentially an umbrella group of all the Democratic groups involved in the 2018 and 2020 congressional races and also governor's races. But they are not as well funded. They will not have the same element of surprise that the Republicans had. And they have to compete on these tilted maps. It is very uphill. Maps matter, and it's been very consequential over the course of this decade.
What exactly is this National Democratic Redistricting Committee planning to do? Former Attorney General Eric Holder is going to head this committee.
Yes, it is being head by Eric Holder. Barack Obama has been deeply involved in the organization and the planning. The goal is to attempt to tip these legislative chambers but it is extraordinarily difficult. The Democrats have not been very successful at it so far, and it doesn't seem like it is especially coordinated or strategic, or that they have much of a plan moving forward. You ask what their plan is. I've talked to them, and I find it hard to tell exactly what the plan is. I think what you have seen in these special elections this year is a lot of confusion from the Democratic Party about which districts they ought to be competing in. Should they be competing in the suburban districts that were tipping against Trump? Should they be competing in rural white working class districts? And there doesn't seem to be much of an answer. And as a result, you see a lot of losses and a lot of flailing.
Well, thank you for calling in, Joyce. Let's go next to Anthony in San Francisco. Hi, Anthony. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me. My question is, are there any states that have laws that discourage partisan gerrymandering, or is it the entire country, basically, that has this problem?
Dave, have any states banned this kind of partisan gerrymandering?
There are a handful of states that have interesting processes. Certainly in Iowa is one example of a state that has taken all control of this away from the politicians and put it in the hands of professional bureaucrats who are actually trusted in the state of Iowa to do this job, and the politicians are not allowed anywhere near it. They can vote the maps up or down, but if they vote the maps down, they go right back to these same bureaucrats for another round. It's not as if the politicians then get to be involved, and these bureaucrats can't use any partisan data. There are some states that use independent commissions, except a lot of these independent commissions are really a fig leaf. They're loaded up with partisans on both sides, and it simply gives the veneer of independence, but is really just the same as smoke-filled room as the legislature. So there's, you know, a lot of doubt as to whether independent commissions are actually a positive way forward.
We have a couple of emails from listeners saying, why is this even legal? And that's what makes this Supreme Court case so important. Let's just talk about that quickly before we go back to calls. Again, a federal court last year found that Wisconsin state assembly districts drawn by a Republican legislature were unconstitutional. And in 2012, the first election following the enactment of these newly redrawn maps, Republicans got 48.6% of the vote, but won a 60-39 seat advantage in the state assembly. And the Supreme Court's going to decide whether those gerrymandered maps violate the Constitution.
That's exactly right. The court has never before weighed in on partisan gerrymandering. The court has always said this is in the realm of the political world, and legislators ought to do it, and we are not going to become the arbiter of of drawing lines. It has gotten to the point that so many of these cases are making their way through the courts out of North Carolina, out of Maryland, and the Wisconsin case that you mentioned, that the Supreme Court now is simply going to have to weigh in. Judge Kennedy asked for a standard to measure when a partisan gerrymander goes too far. Back in the Veith case from Pennsylvania in 2004, the last time this reached the court. And there's a standard called the efficiency gap that was designed by a law professor and a political scientist that intends to essentially measure the effects of a partisan gerrymander on a state. It's trying to measure the number of votes that are wasted that don't go towards electing a candidate. And it's a complicated theorem, but when that number crosses a certain point, it can't be a natural thing. It was intentional. And this is designed to measure when a gerrymander is not fair. And we will see if it intrigues Justice Kennedy. I am not convinced that it will. In some ways, it's a good old-fashioned measure of partisan symmetry test, you know, a seat-to-vote ratio. And Justice Kennedy has not found those to be enough in the past to be a clear, meaningful, and fair standard. Justice Kennedy also, in the racial gerrymandering case back in May in North Carolina, the Harris versus Cooper case, he sided with Justice Alito, who in their dissent in that case did talk about the essential role of legislatures in drawing these lines, and that perhaps the court should not be involved in measuring partisan gerrymanders. So even though he has asked for it, we do not know what his mindset is. We do know that there are probably four votes on one side, four votes on the other, and that the entire thing could hinge on what Justice Kennedy wants to do.
And that you just brought up the case in North Carolina. That was another very important one. The Supreme Court ruled in May that race predominated the Republican redrawing of two of North Carolina's congressional districts.
Yes, there is an entirely separate track of case law. There's partisan gerrymanders, which the courts have always allowed, and then there's racial gerrymanders, where the courts have said you have to be very careful, and they have often disallowed. The question now, in many ways, at a time when essentially African Americans and so many other minority groups do vote with the Democratic Party, you have had, and this was the essence of the case in North Carolina, is that a politician said, this is not an illegal racial gerrymander. This is a partisan gerrymander. And the courts have a real thicket there to try and determine, is it a racial gerrymander or is it a partisan gerrymander, when we are so polarized and so divided that it's so easy to tell which way people are going to vote based on which district you put them in.
Dave Daly is senior fellow at Fair Vote and author of Rat Effed, The True Story Behind the Secret Plan to Steal America's Democracy. Today we are talking about gerrymandering, the practice of redrawing maps to favor one party over the other. This happens every 10 years based on census data, and an AP analysis found that gerrymandering overwhelmingly benefits Republicans, even if more Dems voted. In many states, they wouldn't win because of gerrymandering. You can tweet us at Your Call Radio. Leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Email feedback at yourcallradio.org or give us a call, 415-866-7986. 866-798-8255. There's so many ways to get in touch now. I almost gave you my phone number. Let's go next to to Roger in Alameda. Hi, Roger. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to comment that I think for a lot of Democrats, there's a real sense that our democracy is being undermined at a fundamental level and that we really no longer have a democracy. And by that, I mean that a variety of factors have combined where we now have a minority of voters ruling over a majority. And it's not just gerrymandering, although that's extremely important, as you're pointing out today. It's a Citizens United decision. It was the situation where a Democratic president had a Supreme Court nomination taken away from him and given to a Republican. And it is the Electoral College, and it's the Supreme Court bias, where, to many of us, the Supreme Court really seems to look at a decision and say, is this going to favor a Republican or a Democrat? And they seem to twist decisions like Citizens United to favor one party or the other. And I just want to sum up by saying this really causes a sense of a lack of confidence in our democracy and real frustration and despair about our current political climate.
That's right. Well, thank you for calling in, Roger. I'm going to take a few more calls, and then we'll get Dave's response. Let's hear from Davis in San Francisco. Hi, Davis. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for letting me into the show. Getting into your call is sort of like gerrymandering. First, you have to have access, try to get through the line, try to get through your showrunner, and then wait online. My question is, when the Democrats failed in California, how did they fail when Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor and he redistricted and gerrymandered? What was the failure, and what will your panelists say about that?
All right. Thank you for that question, Davis. We will get an answer in just a minute. I want to take a few more calls. Let's go to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Hello. I don't want to dismiss the importance of gerrymandering, which I think is considerable, but I think you need to view this in the context of even programs you've dealt with on voter suppression. I've got a feeling that even if these districts weren't gerrymandered, the Republicans are going to do, and they are doing, everything they can to try and make sure that the vote is suppressed in 2018. I used to think that given what was going on with Trump, that in 2018, Democrats would have a good chance of at least taking back the House of Representatives. I wouldn't count on that now, given what the Republicans are doing. Kobach and Greg Palast just had a report, which you've alluded to. He had Eric Berman on this district election in Atlanta. He thinks that there was voter suppression that took place there. Finally, I just want to finish on one thing. The Democrats control California. And yet, just the other day, one of the leaders in the assembly says he's not going to bring up the single-payer health care issue that was passed in the Senate because he can't figure out how they're going to pay for it. And to me, this is it doesn't matter if you've got Democrats in control in a state like this where somebody like that can't figure out, hey, you know what, we have to change our tax system. We have to figure out ways that we can fund a real health care system in this state. So even if you have a majority and a Democratic governor, I'm not sure it's going to do you any good. So anyway.
Yeah, well, you brought up a lot there, Greg. David Sirota has a piece in the International Business Times about the Democrats in California who receive a lot of money from the health insurance industry and big pharma. Dave, you heard Roger say that he's frustrated. He's got a lack of confidence in this democracy. Even Princeton University officials say that it's not a democracy because of all these issues that callers are bringing up. But what about that? I mean, you've got gerrymandering, you have voter suppression, you have money in politics. There's a lot of different factors here.
The system is fundamentally broken. One side in the country, in a deeply divided country, essentially has all of the political power at the state level and in Washington. And if Democrats do get more votes than Republicans in 2018 but fail to take back the House of Representatives, you would then have the White House, the Senate, and also the House as supposedly democratic, as small-d institutions, all being run by the side whose candidates got fewer votes. That sounds like a pretty dangerous situation to me. As far as voter suppression goes, I think that that is also a deep problem. But I would suggest that your caller also look at the nature of the legislatures that are passing those bills. The gerrymander goes deeper than simply Congress. All of these states are gerrymandered just as well. And it's often the states that are passing these voter ID laws or laws that limit early voting hours or absentee and things like that. In fact, in many states, the first thing that newly gerrymandered legislatures do, and by that I mean legislatures that hold, big Republican majorities despite being closely divided states. So we're talking about Ohio and Wisconsin and North Carolina, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Florida, and others. The very first thing they do is go after voting rights. Mm. And there's a terrific Brennan Center study on that as well that shows the nature of the states that this is coming from. All of these issues are definitely tied up together, and they have to be taken on together. Yes?
We have a question from a listener on our website. How well did the California Redistricting Commission work? Are you familiar with
that? It's a good question. I am. I think that there have been some positives that have come out of it. You had very non-competitive elections at the congressional level in California in the decade beforehand. You saw in 2012 a handful of incumbents either lose or retire. What you haven't seen is a whole lot of competition in 2014 or 2016. There was a momentary blip when the commissions seemed especially effective, and I'm not convinced that any serious study of them shows that they have worked very well over the long haul.
And you can find more information about this at wedrawthelines.ca.gov. This is a California Citizens Redistricting Commission, which got quite a lot of attention, and I think it was in 2010, but not so much anymore. Maybe we should do a show on this and find out how this is working. Well, thank you for those phone calls. Let's go next to Lorna in Berkeley. Hi, Lorna. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for taking my call. I read an article that came across the feed a couple of weeks ago that the head of the Census Bureau was resigning because the Trump administration was underfunding it, and that like there's nobody the infrastructure of the whole Census Bureau is being wiped out because of the typical underfunding and disappearing of our bureaucracies under this administration. So, is that? If we have no census and no infrastructure in which to do a clear census, then we don't have any clear view of what the demographic and what the electorate is. What's your guys' take on that as far as how it will impact the next election?
Dave, what are your thoughts on this? A number of census watchers are warning that the 2020 census could have major problems because it's not fully funded.
It's a very dangerous situation. It's not only that the census could be underfunded. It's the idea that the census might not get an accurate account because of a political climate in which when folks from clipboards saying they're with the government show up in certain communities, in minority communities, in inner cities, are folks going to honestly say who lives there and how many people live there? I think that there is a lot of concern we ought to have about the accuracy of the count, in addition to questions of funding and just competent administration.
Hmm. Yeah, and this is something that people don't really pay attention to, but because of this, a lot of people are concerned because this affects where hundreds of billions of federal dollars flow every year. Well, we'll add this one also to our show list, so thank you for calling, Lorna. Dave, you have written an entire book about gerrymandering. You have driven along these bizarrely designed districts designed for a very specific reason. What changes would you like to see so this process could be somewhat fair, and so people feel like their votes actually matter, and people actually have a choice?
Yes. We have to fundamentally change the way we think about this. There's an act that Congressman Don Beyer of Virginia put before the U.S. House yesterday. It's called the Fair Representation Act, and this is the silver bullet that cures the problems with our democracy. What Beyer is imagining is a combination of multi-member districts and also ranked choice of voting across the entire country. And if you were able to widen districts so that they are larger, you would widely take away and defeat the power of these map makers to draw lines that give themselves such big advantages. If you brought in ranked choice voting into it, you would increase choices, you would increase the number of the amount of voice that all of us have in choosing our politicians, and you would begin to see a different kind of legislator elected. These districts right now are electing solid conservatives or solid liberals with huge margins. They know that they don't face any real serious challenge. If suddenly you had a system in which you had to compete to be somebody's second choice, suddenly if you had a system that was actually sending Republicans from Massachusetts or Democrats from Oklahoma into Congress, or that folks could vote for a third party candidate without worrying that they were being a spoiler, you could really magically transform our politics. And we have to start thinking about the kinds of fundamental structural reforms that can fix this problem.
This would be incredible. The Fair Representation Act would require that all 435 U.S. House members be elected by ranked choice voting. I mean, this would change the entire game in this country.
We have a districting problem as much as we have a redistricting problem. And as long as we have districts, we are going to have this kind of unfairness in the system.
Dave Daly is senior fellow at Fair Vote and author of the book Rateffed, The True Story Behind the Secret Plan to Steal America's Democracy. It's out now in paperback, and you can read Dave's stories at yourcallradio.org. Dave, thank you for joining us, and thank you for your reporting.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about the high cost of summer camps and child care. For many working families, summer is not about vacations and time off. In fact, with school out, it can be the most difficult and expensive time of the year. If you're tackling these issues, we'd love to hear from you. What policies would help? And how are you coping with this? You can tweet us at Your Call Radio or drop us an email, feedback@yourcallradio.org. That is tomorrow at 10. Your Call is produced here at KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Sana Salim produced today's show. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. You can email us, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.